Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes reporting for duty on a Sunday night for Monday delivery. Got some stuff to talk about from this past weekend. Not the UFC in terms of results from a card because they have a rare week off, as does Bellator. But there was an event called Triller Triad Combat that we definitely want to chime in on. Of course, there is news pertaining to UFC talent and talent from other promotions. Plus, heck, it was a long weekend. We'll recap our Thanksgiving weekend. We all hope you had a nice Thanksgiving for those of you that celebrate it. And now, of course, we turn the page for this week's events. We'll talk a little bit about that as well. We'll do an early preview. You know, mostly we'll spend Thursday's show on that type of stuff. But still, we'll at least let you know what to get fired up for. We'll be right back. We're going to start the MMA Junkie Radio Show for Monday, November 29th. Well, because it all depends on how you want to look at it. People talked about Triller, the Triller's event, Triad Combat, and MMA won in the old boxing versus MMA theme using 8-ounce gloves, open thumb. So that's good. You know, no matter how much we try, we seem to somehow always make it about MMA versus boxing. Although I don't think that should happen anymore. It's like, we know what's up. We go over there, it usually doesn't go well. They come over here, it usually doesn't go well. We meet in the streets, it's not going to go well for them. But the reality is, we always, it usually comes up. But anyway, what were your thoughts on Triller Triad Combat?
You know, usually I'm kind of a skeptic when something new pops up like this. You know, BKFC and, you know, just the original Triller shows. But they kind of win me over. This one in particular did not really do that much for me. I think I'm not a big fan of the triangle ring. I don't really like that too much. But I appreciate that they're doing this. I appreciate that there is a nice payday for fighters. But I don't know how fired up I'm going to be about watching the next one. How about you?
Well, I'm going to save some of that for tomorrow's spinning back click. It's one of the questions that's going to come up, but I'll keep it simple. You got my attention at least twice a year, maybe four times a year. Twice a year sounds like March and September to me, or June and January. All right, you got me. $19.95 is what they charge for the pay-per-view. All right, you got me. But if we go once per quarter, so we'll say January, April, July, and September or something like that. I don't know. October. So maybe once per season, I'm going to get lost. I'm going to get lost in the shuffle. And the reason is because the UFC gives me a healthy serving of what I want from combat sports. Now fill in your boxing matches, like old Sean Porter, recently retired, by the way. He had a nice career. And Bud Crawford, the heavyweights of about a month ago. And I think Teofimo Lopez this past. You know what I'm saying? Canelo. Like, if you give me enough of that, along with MMA and, of course, Bellator and PFL, when they have their runs, my dance card's full, bro. So some of these are going to get lost in the shuffle if you give me more than two per year. I'm good for two per year.
Well, I'm going to tell you the way it is. Around this time in these months, I'm a snob. And if you're going to make me turn my back on college football, on the start of college basketball, on professional basketball, you know, baseball just wrapped up, you got to really get my attention. If you want me to completely walk away from all that stuff, things that are going on in the holiday and just everyday life. So yeah, you got that. The top of your billing has to come pretty strong for me to watch you in these months. Talk to me in July. In July, you might get me to bite on some of these.
Yeah. Main event was Kubrat Pulev versus Frank Mir. And I knew this fight was coming up, but I didn't have time to get excited about it. Not because I didn't believe in the format, boxing versus MMA with that point system, you know, coaches Shannon Briggs versus Rampage. It's just there's too much going on, you know. And like you said, goes, maybe if there had been something way more venomous at the top, then perhaps it's what I needed that last minute. I mean, you got to remember, man, Ohio State and Michigan went at it this weekend. Auburn and Alabama went at it this weekend. High school football, they're wrapping up CIF. That's what we call it in California. I'm sure every state has their version. But the, you know, their sectionals championships, then they go to the regionals and state, and there really is a lot going on. And have I even mentioned soccer? You know what I mean? Like the Lakers were in action. It's too much, man. It's too much. So you have to have something that really, really jumps out. And I think they made an attempt, but like you said, goes, I don't need a triangular ring. I do love 8-ounce boxing gloves for you guys to box in. All right, cool. With the open thumb. Remember, in boxing, from 147 and below, so that's welterweight in boxing, they use 8-ounce gloves. So it's not like it was anything more lethal. It's just they had the open thumb here, you know. So I think grabbing might be a little bit easier. You saw Mitrione doing some of that. And then from 154 and above, which is either junior middleweight or super welterweight, depending on which sanctioning body you follow, they use 10-ounce gloves. And now some of that can be negotiated. It's not hardcore. That they did that in the McGregor and Floyd fight, but that fight took place at 154, if I'm not mistaken, and they were able to do 8-ounce gloves. Floyd got talked into it. Imagine that. I think he knew he wasn't in too much trouble of getting hit. So therefore he could maybe, you know, use it to put it on McGregor, but he likes to protect his hand. So I think against the boxer that wouldn't have happened. But anyway, that's a whole other story here. Stuff went down. Look, it went well for MMA. MMA won, I guess, the MMA versus boxing series. Coach Rampage, way to go. But, yeah, there was still a few things that took place that I guess we should talk about. So let's talk about Pulev versus Frank Mir. This one ended quick, and it was a sad ending. And I don't know if it's because we know Frank being a, you know, Vegas guys, and he's a Vegas guy. I just don't like seeing somebody out like that. I mean, Pulev is – I think he almost has 30 wins in boxing. He hit him with a nice straight right. Then Mergliata looked like he wanted to step in, didn't, and then he got hit with a vicious left. And then Mir was doing a little bit of a chicken dance. Mergliata knew better at that point, and he stopped it. But did you see Pulev was slowly closing in?
Yeah.
Imagine what was headed his way, man, a career ender. So I'm glad Mergliata stepped in there. And I'm just wondering if he should have stepped in before. You know, I'm not sure. And I don't want to criticize Mergliata because I think he's a great ref. And at that moment, it could be that, you know, Mir was maybe okay. I don't know. That's not the whole point of what I'm trying to say. The whole point of what I'm trying to say, though, is that little wobbly highlight, it's going to get talked about. It's already gotten talked about. You know, Twitter kind of blew up.
Yeah, I think without a doubt he should have walked in a little bit sooner. He got lucky. That guy could have closed the distance really fast and would have had a clean open shot that would have put Frank into the second row. I mean, he just was not in a place to be fighting at that moment. You could see it in his eyes. You could see it in the way he was walking. It was just bad. So he got lucky. that he didn't take that extra shot. But that's a rough outing for Frank Mir. You know, the last couple of years have not been too kind to Frank, and he's made some great paydays. But the question is, at what expense? You know.
Yes, goes. You're right, because I really hope they're getting paid well. You know, Frank told us before, you know, his other boxing match that he had, that he was getting paid handsomely, and that's good. He's never really shied away from knowing that a prize fighter is going to have some wear and tear before the whole career is over, you know. But I think a lot of us, when we talk about MMA, we're thinking like all the body parts, shoulders, knees, ankles, hands. With boxers, it's primarily around the head, you know, head trauma. With MMA fighters, it is. Don't get me wrong. It's not that it isn't, but I think we're slowly adapting. It wasn't until like about maybe 10 years ago that we really started to talk about it. You know, this sport's 28 years old. It just turned on November 12th of 2021. It's 28 years old. So we went the first 18 not really talking too much about TBI, you know, head trauma, traumatic brain injury in MMA. Now we are, that and weight cutting when things really got serious. But for the first 18, we didn't really talk about it too much. And now that some of our guys are drifting over into boxing, we're seeing it. As bad as it sounds, goes, I'm almost happy that Frank went out that way. And here's why. Because the other, I think there was 8 matches, 6 of them went to decision. Why would I want to see Frank get beaten around and take even more damage, you know, in a fight that he more than likely was going to lose? Again, this guy was pretty seasoned. At least this way it ended quickly.
Yeah, I could see that. I understand that. But I just don't want the thing about these types of injuries is you can never predict which one is the one that's going to give you all the trouble, right? That's why you have to be a little preemptive with that stuff, kind of like what GSP used to say. And in this particular case, it could have been this one. You know, this is something that maybe in 2 years he feels the effect of what happened that night. Let's not forget, aside from everything that Frank Mir has gone through inside the cage, inside the boxing ring, he was also in a pretty bad motorcycle crash. You know what I mean? Like, your body can only take so much.
Well, in the early 2000s, Frank Mir was a big, strong, formidable jiu-jitsu player. We didn't even start talking about his hands until the second decade in the 2000s. In the first decade, we knew he had obviously some good all-around skills, but we saw him more as a guy that, you know, you don't want to mess with Frank on the ground. And, you know, that's how he took out Brock Lesnar, for example. Tim Sylvia. And then all of a sudden he did develop some hands, and so that's why he's felt comfortable, I think, taking some of these matches. He sparred with some really, really good boxers in Vegas. He's had his nice share of knockouts in MMA. But he's also now 40+. And again, if the payday is matching the risk, great. And going back to our conversation with Paul Felder last year, look after yourself, Frank. Especially you being in Vegas, it's probably not that hard to go to the Cleveland Clinic and participate and just see where you're at and look after yourself is all I can see. But I'm telling you, that highlight, those images, it kind of creeped me out a little bit. I just saw it and I was like, oh, you know. I'm just hoping that by Monday he's good. Remember, goes, Frank Mir was, when he was with the WEC, we all talked about, geez, he's got a really nice delivery and vocabulary. He explains fights well. He's got a long career in commentating, you know, once he's done with mixed martial arts. And then like 15 years ago, I think they, maybe 12, they said, okay, you know, no more WEC. He was really entrenched there. But this guy should have been part of that rotation of the UFC guys because he was really, really talented. He should be there right now with Cormier's, Felder's, Bisping's. You know, the Fertittas love that guy. We know some stuff behind the scenes about the UFC and you know how much they liked Frank. Frank was a guy that served them well. He was a Las Vegas guy who could represent the company and represent it well, you know, and eventually his contract went out, and I don't know what his relationship is with them now because he went over to Bellator, and then since then he's now participated in some boxing. But I just think that this guy you know, should be in that same position as the guys that I keep mentioning, Cruz, Bisping, and explaining the game to people and just enjoying his successes. He won a UFC title. No one can ever take that away from him. He won a UFC title. He's done. He's made some money, you know, and now just explain the game to all of us and be that legendary dude.
Well, Frank was good at commentating before he even really entrenched himself in boxing and worked on his hands and just discovered a completely different facet of the game where he really entrenched himself and all that. And so I can't imagine how good he would be today at doing all that type of stuff. But yeah, you know, we'll see. Hopefully everything's okay. And hopefully he can maybe fall back on that type of work. You know, when Tyron Woodley did Triller, I thought that's the end of him. We'll never see him on a UFC broadcast. And we did. So you never know. You really never know with this guy.
Alexander Flores defeated Matt Mitrione 68-64, two-time. 67-65 was the other judge's score. Mitrione did knock down Alexander Flores, but he lost the decision. This kind of was MMA had been on a run there, you know, of winning fights versus the boxers. So boxing finally stood up for themselves in these last two fights. I mentioned Pulev's win over Mir, Flores' decision, Mitrione in the co-main event. What did you think of this one?
Well, Matt Mitrione's had it pretty rough, man. It was a close fight. You know, people wouldn't have been shocked if they gave it to Mitrione. But boxing was able to save a little bit of face here at the end. But, you know, like you mentioned in the beginning, it's like, I don't even know if there really is a scoreboard here. You know, like, it just kind of seems like both sides know their role. They know their place. And neither one really, with the exception of Conor McGregor, mouths off. You know, when Frank did his last fight in boxing, he wasn't mouthing off or nothing like that. Mm-hmm. I don't know a lot of MMA guys that mouth off to boxing guys and boxing guys that mouth off to MMA guys. It was cool, boxing versus MMA, but I don't know. I think we're looking for a rivalry that's not really there.
And doesn't need to be there because boxers, most of them are very respectful. So are the commentators. But all it takes is maybe like two guys piping up per year, and then it sounds like there's a rivalry, especially if we push back. But there really isn't. I think there's room for both guys. I think boxing is accepted. Okay, them cats can get down. I want no part of some guy with cauliflower ears coming after me. And I think MMA fighters also recognize, you know, what's going on in boxing, and there's usually an extra zero on their paychecks, you know, and maybe that's why some of them want to migrate, you know, over there. Whether it's for one boxing match or they think that they could maybe become a boxer. I don't know. They see that and you got to tip your hat to that formula that boxing has, man. It does enrich its athletes.
Mm-hmm. It does.
Mike Perry in the featured bout defeated Michael Seals. This was a split decision. 67-65, 65-67, 67-65. So close scores, and this is a fight where Seals knocked down Perry, and Perry came back and won. What did you think of this one?
I think Mike Perry is starting to seem a little bit more like the old Mike Perry, and I like the things that he's saying now. You know, he kind of shouted out his kid being in the audience. Just seems happy. I don't know what the end of his career with UFC was like. Maybe be behind the scenes, just them and negotiations and conversation. But right now, he just kind of seems like a happy dude. He likes to go and throw down, and especially the way this ring is built. It's built for guys like him. He takes chances, and he got put down in that fight. But it's nice to see Mike Perry not just care about the scrap, but actually care about the wins and losses. And it seems like he went there a little bit.
He seemed in his environment, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that totally seems like him. It's funny because Perry, heavy-handed and all, tough brawler. In MMA, he was starting to show off some wrestling, some jiu-jitsu. He was just, how can I put it to you? Good enough to beat, you know, every division has about 50 or 60 gals in them. He was good enough to beat about 85% of them or 90%, and he was just coming up short against 10 of them or so. And it just happened to be the 10, including the champ, that are ahead of you. But it doesn't mean he sucked at MMA. It just means he couldn't kind of get to that next level. But he was exciting. He connected with fans. I wouldn't mind him returning to MMA, but he does seem like he's in his environment here. And again, if they're paying, they're paying. Great. But again, fighters, all fighters, look after yourselves. That's all. That's all we're saying is just look after yourselves. The resources are there, and it's like what Goz just explained. He's enjoying being a father. Well, you want to be able to read a bedtime story to your kid. You want to be able to help your kid with his homework. And look, I don't want to be a softie or anything, but in the history of combat sports, including hockey and football, there's been some tragic stuff, folks. And I don't want to get into it right now. Maybe that's for another episode. But there's been a lot of tragic stuff that has happened where people have hurt themselves or hurt others. And that's why we emphasize this. Anyway, this is about the time, Goz, where I have to come clean. The rest of the card, I didn't see. All right? But here's some results. Derek Campos defeated Brian Vera. Albert Tumanov defeated Scott Sigmund. Alexa Culp defeated Angelina Hofschneider. Harry Gigliotti defeated Jacob Thrall. So those were all your those were all of your results there. I would say that I probably care to go back and see Campos and Tumanov do their thing because I enjoyed watching them in MMA. In MMA, I can't talk. And but it's kind of like that was where if Triller's going to reel me in, you got me for a couple hours. But I'll just watch your three fights and some Metallica and I'm good.
Yeah, when you look up and down this card, so you have guys – like a Mike Perry, right? Where you feel like this dude's at home right now. He may actually like this and flourish in that. And you have a guy like Tumanov where this just seems like a stop. You know, he was very clear. He would like to go back to the UFC and he feels like he could still do some stuff there. So the cast of characters that get rotated in these cards, I think are all very, very different. But overall, I mean, you know, I'm not going to be a snob. I would check out the next one, but I'm going to say I wasn't as fired up as maybe I was for like Jake Paul and Tyron Woodley, you know, like that one really got my attention.
Yeah. You know, I took some heat on social media. I think it was an Instagram. So Matthew Wells, shout out to him. He's one of the editors at MMA Junkie. He lives in the Dallas area. So he covered this event for us and he actually caught up with Tyron Woodley, did a quick video interview. It's there available on MMAJunkies.com. All the interviews are also available on our YouTube page, youtube.com/MMAJunkieVideo. But he, you know, when we have content like that, we cut up certain little portions of interviews and then put them on social media. And all I said was, yeah, I want to see Jake Paul versus Tyron Woodley again. And here's why, because that fight was compelling. I thought Jake Paul he had the better boxing skills, we'll say, but I thought Woodley was the better athlete with the one hitter quitter type of punch. And to be fair, it's not like Jake Paul didn't ice a couple guys. He did too. But I just thought, you know, Woodley could punch back, whereas I think Jake Paul hadn't had that type of opposition. And so I was compelled. I sat on the edge of my seat and I watched it. And the next thing you know, when I saw that the fight was getting past the third round mark, I think that's the farthest Paul had gone. And Woodley was doing well. He was well-trained. Even though he didn't have the cleanest boxing, his experience in championship fights and in combat sports was starting to show a little bit and looked like the tide was going to maybe turn. So I wasn't watching beautiful boxing. I admit that. I wasn't watching, you know, a classic between two of the top guys in the Sweet Science. I realized that, but I was watching two fighters that it appeared were kind of similarly matched. And I thought the tide might turn and Woodley might put it on Paul because Paul was starting to suffer from cardio. But alas, Woodley's reluctance to engage, which sometimes didn't make him a fan favorite in MMA, it happened in boxing. But I honestly thought that fight was there for the taking for Tyron Woodley. I thought Tyron Woodley could have beat him because he had gas left in the tank. He could have put pressure on him. I don't know if he would have finished him, but I think he would have won enough rounds to win the fight. And so that's why I think I want to see it again, because I think Woodley can make some adjustments, but so can Jake Paul. Jake Paul can probably address his cardio issues. He probably learned a lot along the way. After that, I'm nearly not interested in seeing anything else. I mean, sure, if you tell me Nate Diaz is going to fight Jake Paul, yeah, I'd probably be into that. But Nate Diaz still has another fight left in MMA, and he takes so long to fight that if you were to tell me right now Nate Diaz is fighting, well, the soonest he'd be fighting is probably January. And as soon as he can fight Jake Paul's next summer, well, I'm looking to see who Jake Paul's going to fight in January, you know, or maybe in February, not next summer. So I kind of like to go with the people that are available. Connor's not available. Masvidal's not available. The Diaz brothers aren't available. They're either under contract or they're, you know, they're just not available. So who is available? Well, in the meantime, I wouldn't mind seeing him running back with Tyron Woodley. That was the only reason I commented like that.
I disagree. I do not want – there have been too many nights at the end of the night where I've had to say, I feel like Tyron Woodley would win that fight if he just would have put his foot on the gas. And I'm sick of doing that. And especially in this type of fight. You know what I mean? Like, I would watch it again if I were at somebody's house or something like that. But the first time, you legit got me to order it. I wanted to see live what happened, and I didn't want to hear about it from anybody else. There was a big buildup. I think Jake Paul delivered on his end. He went out there and he threw what he could do. You know, he did his best. You're right, he did gas. He gassed, but up against he gassed because, you know, he was actually doing something out there. For me, I felt like even if Tyron Woodley won a decision, that's a loss.
Okay.
Same with Floyd Mayweather.
I'm not in total disagreement. I don't have to see it. I'm just saying if they did it, they did it. I'm just saying he's available and there's bad blood there. You know, you can build off. I think, to be fair, it was a split decision too. But let's say I go, okay, no Woodley. Who would you face Jake Paul against? Because I don't want to see him against the boxer. He's not good enough to box a real boxer. I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah.
Unless it's a tomato can.
The name you threw out is perfect. Like, that's another name, again, Nate Diaz, that would make me get interested. But that seems like it's kind of a ways away. I'm not really into the Tommy Fury fight. I'm really not into that. So it's got to be somebody like that. Yeah, like a Nate Diaz.
I think you get like a
pit bull brother or something like that. I'd be into that.
Whoever Nate fights next will be the end of his contract. I think the UFC could tell him, if you stick around, you got the Conor fight. And I think the Conor fight will pay him better than the Jake Paul fight. Remember, some of these pay-per-views haven't been as big as we think they have been, you know. It still has been enough for some of these guys and gals to get great paydays. Don't get me wrong. But I don't know that a lot of these are selling the million pay-per-views that's being promoted. So, whatever. All right, any final thoughts on Triller Fight Club? Metallica, did you enjoy that?
That's the only part I didn't see was the Metallica. I was going to watch that tonight, but I didn't see that.
Yeah, they did a set in the middle of the show, and then they did one before the main event. It was cool. I'd rather just go to a concert and watch Metallica, but if you told me, you know, we're at the fights, and I go, when's the next fight? And you go, well, hold on, Metallica's going to play. I wouldn't be mad at that. You know, I'd be like, all right, that's cool. I really enjoyed it when Megadeth played at Affliction. I thought it was so different. But I thought, cool, I'm getting a lot for my a lot of bang for my buck, you know. And so I never was against it like others were back in 2007, 2008 when Affliction did their shows. So I'll take it. I thought the first time Triller did something where they had, what, Bieber and yeah, it's like when they were doing, if you want to do a couple musical acts, okay, Two's My Limit. I didn't need arm wrestling and then these vignettes, and it sucks because I love Ric Flair, but just make Ric Flair part of something else that you know what, just show him that he's in the crowd. Honestly, he doesn't have to do a vignette. Him and Shaq and whoever else is there, cool, you know. Just limit, give me 99%, 95% combat sports. and then whatever else you got to do to be different. Okay. What do you think of their production? Rampage keeps saying that these guys are a threat to Bellator and the UFC. I disagree. I think people can only take so much, but I'll give them this, and that this isn't a trailer specific item I'm bringing up. Ramps, pyrotechnics, production, you know, and featuring the fighters. Well, that's been for years, you know, going back to Pride. Bellator's done well with it. Strikeforce done well with it. That I agree. I love fighters getting that type of shine, but it just seems like the UFC is dead set against it. But do you like what Triller does in that department?
I do. I like what they do. As far as if they're a threat or not, it's going to take a lot to be a threat to the UFC. If anything, the biggest threat to me to the UFC are these online Hulus and HBO Maxes and all that kind of rack up your $5.99s, your $10.99s here and there. That is what may keep somebody from ordering a pay-per-view. I think those are the biggest threats right there. BKFC, I signed up for BKFC, the last card. It's like $5 a month or something like that. And you get all the cards.
And they've hit their stride. They're now like about 5 years in, and they've hit their stride where you can count on a BKFC at least every couple months, if not every month. And they have some nice, compelling matchups. They pay their athletes well, and I think they get down over there, you know, maybe sometimes too much. I don't think Lombard needed to blow up on that guy, Lorenzo Hunt, when he just creeped up to him after the fight. But you know how Lombard rolls. But they have a little bit of that swaggy stuff, you know, edgy stuff that I think some of us like.
Yeah. Now, I actually, you know, for them to be in the position that they're in today, I think they've done pretty well. But I would in no way say they're a threat to the UFC. And look how much further along the line they are, I think. Triller, I mean, you'd have to go almost every week and have compelling matchups every week to be some kind of a threat. Who's going to watch that and then say, nah, I don't want to watch the UFC? I don't think that's happening.
Right. Let's talk about some of the latest news. We had a fun chat with Paul Felder, and the team has recapped a few of the angles that were discussed. But I wanted to ask you, I guess, specifically, and I brought it up a couple times today, the Cleveland Clinic stuff. I can't remember if we spoke about that last week because it was earlier in the week. We did some pre-record, so I don't believe we touched on it. But I think that was one of the things I was really happy about. And I think it applies here with what we were talking about, that finish with Frank Mir.
Yeah, that was one of the coolest parts of that interview, was him talking about that. Because, you know, fighters can be like a superstitious bunch. And just talking about it, it's kind of hard to get fighters to do. And for him to come out and share some of the things that he shared with us, I think is great for fans to hear. But more importantly, I think it's great for his fellow colleagues to hear. You never know. Like, I think there's something, remember in sports when you were just kind of embarrassed to tell someone you were hurt? You know, you just kind of walk it off. It was, we were kids, you know? I think pro athletes sometimes are a little embarrassed to have these talks. And maybe if someone you respect comes out and says something like that, especially with a sport that has so much bravado, I think maybe, you know, even if a couple fighters saw that interview and said, you know what, I'm going to go in and check this out. Or I'm even taking the step of going online and just seeing what it's about. That's a win, man. And I thought that was very important.
Yeah, and how that was tied, for those that are wondering. So Paul Felder has been to the Cleveland Clinic, which has two locations, one in Vegas and one in Cleveland, Ohio. And they are very entrenched in the world of combat sports and assisting athletes, current and past, in terms of dealing with traumatic brain injuries. So studying it and making the fighters part of the sample size. And so they make everything free of charge to the athletes to come in and see where they stand. Any extensive fees, at least from what we hear, the UFC is willing to cover for their athletes. So in case something were to go a little further than the normal testing that they do, the UFC apparently is there for their athletes. And so Paul Felder, he brought that up to us because we told him, hey, listen, every couple months lately, it's been a year since you've retired, but there's this little tease that, you know, you might be interested. You might have the itch, the hunger. And he said, just to recap it, there's no sense in giving you the whole interview here. You can catch it at youtube.com/MMA junkie video. It's a great interview, too. You guys will like it if you guys want to check it out. But basically, he said, there's only two ways I come back. One, if Connor yells my name, and he's not summoning him. He's not begging him for it. But obviously, if somehow he's in his way, on his radar, and he wants to get down, he knows that would be lucrative. And the other one would be once the UFC opens up and starts going to, you know, the different cities to host their events, if they were to go to the city of brotherly love, he would love to fight on a card like that. So those would be two times where he would consider it. But he reassured us that it would be in terms of his health, because he's 37 now, I believe. He's in great physical fitness, walking around lower than he ever has. He's big into triathlons and marathons. And as far as his brain is up to par. Tests that he did 6 years ago, he's either at or exceeded, you know, his competency and the bars that have been set, the litmus test, I guess, that was done years ago. He measures up, and he feels good about that. And so we pressed him a little bit, and that's when he shared with us a little bit about, you know, his experience at the Cleveland Clinic. But I don't know. I'm happy for him, and I really enjoyed talking to him. And that's why we brought it up, and hopefully you guys can take a listen. How about McGregor and Poirier? Seems like every couple weeks something comes up. I was expecting this. Poirier is less than 2 weeks away from a title fight against Charles Oliveira at UFC 269, which, by the way, folks, big announcement, a UFC 269 watch-along is on the agenda here on MMA Junkie. So I know a lot of you have gone back and tuned in and been disappointed the last few months that we haven't done it, but there's one taking place on December 11th, UFC 269. We might as well start talking about it right now, or at least mentioning it right now, while I mention that with Poirier coming up, goes, you just know McGregor's going to pre, during, and post-fight, he's going to saddle up next to him, and he's going to poke and prod, and he wants that fourth fight. Are you interested?
No. Well, yeah, but I'm not willing to give up all the things that have to happen for that to go down. But it's a crazy question, George. I mean, for as ridiculous as it sounds, I think the UFC could possibly do it. I don't know how, but it's going to have to take some Legion of Doom shit. But I'll tune in like an idiot, like a monkey, just sitting there hearing that accordion play. I'll be dancing and I'll tune in. But boy, would it say a lot about the sport. Hell, man. Like, it would almost say a lot about Dustin Poirier, too, to just take that fight. I don't know, dude.
If Poirier wins, Poirier versus McGregor is way... Well, hold on a second. What am I thinking?
George, all they got to say is they got unfinished business. You saw the way that fight ended.
Be for a title, except McGregor wants both, and that's the part I'm not happy about, because this sounds like I'm jealous, and I'm not. I just like to protect the integrity of the sport when I can, throwing my two cents in. But if McGregor fights Poirier a fourth time, I can't blame Poirier for taking it, because apparently he gets paid well when he does, and as a champion, then he would get massive pay-per-views, probably the biggest payday of his life. So I can't imagine that Poirier wouldn't push for it. He's been whooping him the last two fights. Although, to be fair, McGregor won round one. What was it? The Abu Dhabi fight?
Vegas.
I can't even remember, man. But McGregor has done well, you know, did well in one of the rounds. He won the round. But in the end, Poirier didn't look too concerned or too hurt. And, you know, he's taking a couple hard shots in each fight, two and three. But for the most part, he turns it on and just wins. So he probably has to feel comfortable about a fourth fight when he gets paid well. Sure. But I don't know. If Poirier wins, do I want it to be his first title defense? No. I think McGregor should have to fight someone. And then he can have a shot at Poirier. I get it. It's a big fight. It's hard to get away from. It's not unfinished business, though. I'll tell you that much. Poirier beat him twice. Straight up. That's it. You can say, I'd like to even the score and get it to 2-2, but there's nothing unfinished about it. Mm-hmm. He checked a few of your kicks. Don't give me this whole, I had a stress fracture going in, this, that, whatever. Like, I imagine a lot of fighters crack bones going in, and then there's the eventual break, but you chose the dance, you know what I mean? So Poirier was beating him. Poirier was beating him in that fight. It was just a matter of time. It's not unfinished business. It's just a chance to go 2-2, but I know how McGregor rolls, and he's got a powerful voice. So, you know, most people are going to believe what he's got to say, but I don't think that fight needs to happen, you know, straight up. And that, not when you got – I mean, look at the mess that Justin Gaethje and Makhachev were in, and finally it looks like that's settled. It appears Beneil Dariush will fight Islam Makhachev. Justin Gaethje will get the winner of Poirier versus Charles Oliveira, and that's that. But I think Conor McGregor should have to fight somebody first. The risk is if he loses, then he's not getting the title shot. But I think the one thing I can say about him versus Poirier part four, or him versus Nate Diaz part three, it can happen coming off losses. That's not a big deal.
Yeah. I mean, I just think it makes way more sense with Nate Diaz having one more fight. Make that one happen. You know, I mean, let's just be evil Dana White for a second. You're probably thinking Conor could probably win that fight, that Nate Diaz fight. Have him win that fight, and then you can put him in whatever the hell you want. Because all you really need is one Conor McGregor win to catapult him into whatever the hell you want at that point. Just do that. You're going to make money, too.
Yeah. What do you think of Misha Tate removing her own stitches? Kind of gangster. She's been around the sport for a while. So I'm sure a lot of fighters have done that on their own. I don't think they go to the follow-up and do it. But, you know, like, I bet you a lot of people were tripping.
It's yeah, you're right. A lot of people do it, but there's just something about, like, Misha. I mean, yeah, she's a mom, too, you know? Like, there's just something gangsterish about doing that.
Plus, around the eyes, too. Like, it just seems like it's more of a little sensitive area. And, like, maybe my elbow, my forearm, my shoulder, my leg, I don't know, but around the eye, I was tripping.
Think about how much shit has to happen in your life for you to be comfortable doing that yourself, you know?
Yeah, most definitely. Rachel Ostovich versus Paige VanZant. You think it ends at 2-2, or sorry, at 1-1? We had a nice chat with Rachel Ostovich.
It's starting to seem that way, but I think even if they're friendly, which it appears they're going to be, I think you could still have that third fight in something and still have fun. And, you know, even if it's Submission Underground or something like that, you know, I think it would be fun. You got to do it. Like, I think you kind of joked with her, like, even if it's fucking checkers or something, but you got to do that third one. I think it'll be fun.
And, you know, I think we just, because we were so focused on McGregor and Poirier, we didn't really mention, or I mentioned it, we didn't really react to it, but Dariush versus Makhachev, are you pleased with that matchup?
Yeah, I think it's something that needed to happen. Both those guys are in really good positions, and I know it seemed like they were trying to avoid that fight probably because of their manager, and I understand that. But at the end of the day, that you just can't sit around. You know, Beneil Dariush has been sitting around for a while and all these other fights are taking place. So it's a tough fight for both guys. Both guys come to fight, but the winner of that fight can be put in a pretty good position. Do you think one guy winning that fight would be in a better position than the other?
Makhachev, he seems near. Well, oof. Well, Makhachev has 9 in a row, I think. Dariush has like 6. Dariush has just been the bigger name for a long time. But if he can beat Dariush, it's going to be hard to deny him. But then again, that unicorn McGregor's around. He can spoil parties for sure. And I would say that if Makachev wins, okay, let me put this in perspective. Gaethje gets the winner of Poirier versus Oliveira. McGregor could possibly just slip in and be next after that. And then, you know what, man? Makachev might have to take two fights regardless. Because of Poirier. Well, sorry, because of McGregor. He might. I don't know. If he doesn't, if he just goes the route of Nate Diaz and just fucks about or whatever, then he's, he's probably next after Gaethje. So he's not really next, but, you know, he's got to beat Dariush. But if he beats him, then he'll be next for the winner of Gaethje versus Poirier and Oliveira. It'll be so much easier once Poirier and Oliveira have fought, and then we know that guy's the winner there is fighting Gaethje, and we have an idea if there's injuries or controversies or anything like that.
It's a paycheck fight. The only good thing that comes out of it is they make money. But I honestly, I don't know that either one is going to move that much more than where they're at now.
They're both soft-spoken, and neither one really moves that needle that Dana White wants. I think Dariush is pretty cool, pretty funny. I love the way he fights. I just think he's a nice guy, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that. And I think Dana likes to promote, I wouldn't say bad boys, but he likes to promote what's the word? I don't want to just bow out and say fighters that are easily promotable. He likes controversy. He likes,
you know who he likes? British. He likes Stone Cold Steve Austin. He would rather promote him than Bret the Hitman Hart.
Right. There you go. And those guys are Bret the Hitman Hart, and that's cool. He'd rather promote Nature Boy Ric Flair instead of Hulk Hogan. So, yeah, vitamins and prayers and things like that, you know, they just don't get over as much. But we'll see, man. You know, I keep wondering about if 65 opened up and 75 opened up, if that would alleviate things for this guy. You know what I mean? Even Connor was saying, I could move up to 170. Stop it, Connor. No, you can't. But if Usman won
65,
then then maybe 65 would open up for him. You know, I don't know. Like, there would be so many other things that could happen. Like, Masvidal could maybe drop down to 65. Like, there would be so many things that could open up to Dana White if he would open up 65 and 75 and just get rid of 70. I think there's just an extra title with extra storylines and extra paths to the title, and it wouldn't be so clogged up between, you know, lightweight and welterweight. Right now you have a dominant welterweight who's clowning everybody, and then you have a lightweight division that has been in all sets of turmoil, all these injuries, and did Habib retire or not? You know, is Conor coming back or not? Like, that division just has taken so long to, you know, become what it could be.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Matt Brown got COVID. He's out. He's not fighting this weekend. He put out an interesting tweet to kind of answer all the questions. Basically, he didn't really want to get into it or anything like that. And he didn't preach or anything, but this is what he said. He goes, I've been getting a lot of messages asking if I'm okay, so I'll just answer here. I'm totally fine. I'm a little fatigued from fighting off the sickness, but getting a lot of things done around the house still. I only had 2 days that I was sick, too sick to do anything. It's just terrible timing to catch COVID. That's what sucks. I put in a lot of time, energy, and money into this camp and won't get any of that back now. That does suck. Also, those for asking, I'm not vaccinated. I'm not tribal about either side of the argument. Just never felt it was necessary for myself. Goes, I love that explanation. You know, I'm pro the vaccine, but I have no problem with those that aren't. And he's not preaching to anybody. But here's another interesting thing he said. I don't need to hear your opinion on whether I should be jabbed or not. Either. I'm not really into debating things that people already have their minds made up about. I've kind of taken that approach too.
Yeah.
You know, where like This is my thoughts. Those are your thoughts. Instead of arguing, let's talk about the where we're going to go have a drink or where we're going to go get a bite to eat. Oh. Or what channel we're going to watch a game at. I had a great chat with my buddy Boyd, who's for sure right, and I'm left. And we never once argued or anything, whereas a few months ago here in Vegas, we were yelling at each other, laughing, though, not like in any confrontational way, but yelling at each other and you know, both of our blood pressures went up. But this time it was so civil and chill. And I was thinking of what Matt Brown said. I ain't going to change his mind. He ain't changing my mind. So let's just chat a little bit about what you feel or something like that. But other than that, just, you know, leave it at what it is. And I thought Matt Brown did an excellent job of addressing it.
Yeah, you know, you bring up that strategy and nothing will make one of your friends more upset than not taking the bait. If they want to start an argument, no matter what it's about, you know, as long as it's something controversial and you go, hey, man, what's the best pizza in California? They'll look at you like, what just happened? And they'll get even more mad that you don't care.
Mm-hmm. I love it. I'm just not into debating things where whatever he said, your mind's already set. And that's so true. So all I can say is Matt Brown, get well soon. It sucks. He's so right about the money that he probably spent for a couple training partners and maybe he flew to be away from his family, whatever. Whatever it was, he spent some money and he, you know, he doesn't get to fight, but at least it appears he doesn't have the type of symptoms that will keep him out for long, and that's good.
Mm-hmm.
One fight that's sneaking under the radar, by the way, is Ponzinibbio versus Jeff Neal at 269. And I was just talking about 269 in our watch along, and we're excited about it. Two title fights. Kai Kara France, we talked to him recently against Cody Garbrandt. Who isn't looking forward to that one? But Ponzinibbio versus Jeff Neal, don't sleep on that one.
No, that'd be a good scrap. I like that one.
Yeah, me too. And, you know, that's about it, man. Look, here's some of the sad stuff, I guess, a little bit. Diego Sanchez, he's got a serious case of COVID. And he says there's a comment from him. These have been some trying times. God bless that guy. Honestly, he went through a lot. I don't know if that Jacob guy or whatever his name was punked him for money or his reputation or what. He should have had that last fight in the UFC. He didn't. And right after the cut happened, he split with the guy. And now
he's Joshua Fabia.
Joshua Fabian. And now he's going through this COVID stuff. And I felt sad for him when I read that.
Just seeing the picture of him laying like that. Like, you know, you look at some of these fighters, they're superheroes to a lot of people. They're gladiators. And to see one just laying there at the mercy of you know, a sickness, it sucks. It really does. And you know, Diego's going to say weird things and out there things, but at the end of the day, like, he's a dude that's gonna shake your hand. He's a cool cat. He's a nice guy.
Yeah. Almost done here. Kamaru Usman, did you hear that 3 weeks before the Covington fight, UFC 268 in New York, he broke his hand?
No, I didn't.
Yeah.
When did that come out? I didn't hear that.
Yeah, there's different versions of, you know, the types of fractures, I guess, that can happen to any part of the body. A lot of athletes do compete, you know, with broken bones. Like, I don't know if you watched any of the modern day game on Friday, but number 31 Williams, the linebacker, he had this big old cast, dude. Goes, it looked like that big hammer that Alistair Overeem used to walk in with at Pride. Is that what we call it? A hammer? A mallet?
Sledgehammer.
Sledgehammer, yeah. That's what it looked like this kid had, but he had a broken wrist underneath, but he still competed and he did well. He had two sacks. But yeah, man. Forgot what I was gonna say.
Was it like the club that what was that guy's name? Joe Jacoby or what? Remember in the 80s?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, big time, man. But why did I bring that up? Where was I headed?
We were just talking about
Usman, yeah. So yeah. Anyway, he, you know, commission usually has a doctor and they squeeze your hand and manipulate your hand and who knows how far he was able to tough that one out. But that was a trip when I read that, you know, because a lot of fighters, especially prize fighters that are going into tough matchups, you want to be 100%. Your hand's your hand, man. You grab with that hand, you punch with the hand, you sometimes block with the hand. But yeah, he said he broke it. That's what he said on a recent interview that he did.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And then the last thing I wanted to bring up was, what did you think of Matt Erickson from our website? He had an interview with Halle Berry. I really enjoyed that chat he had with Valentina Shevchenko and Halle Berry. And of course, that movie has now dropped. It's available for everyone to see. It's about an MMA fighter, an older MMA fighter, and the character Halle Berry plays. And of course, Valentina's the opponent. She's kind of the heel. And the movie's called Bruised. Have you had a chance to see it, or have you had a chance to see the interview as well?
I've seen the interview. I haven't had a chance to see the movie yet, but it is on my list. I do want to watch it. And that's kind of Matt's wheelhouse. You know? What's that?
Yeah, me too. I'm excited to see it.
Yeah, that's Matt Erickson's wheelhouse. So it's good to see him come out and do something like that. Mix two of his passions, you know, one MMA and one movies.
Mm-hmm. Shevchenko is the lady killer, I believe. The fight is available on Netflix. It's available. Check it out. Halle Berry, she is directing for the first time. So she's acting and directing. She said she needed to do it all because she needed to be hands-on, because she loves MMA and this story meant a lot to her. And so the interview is really, really cool. Jackie Justice is her character. But she said that she really immersed herself in our sport. Did a lot of the hard training and a lot of bumps and bruises, but I really enjoy when I get to see Charlize Theron, Halle Berry, you know, and then a lot of the male celebrities that love our sport and are always there, you know, and she's become one of the biggest ones out there. She's an Oscar winner, for crying out loud. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it is pretty cool. And, you know, like, I know it's just a movie, but the training you have to do to be in that situation and be in that movie is legit. And she had to do it, you know, a lot of it with Valentina Shevchenko, a lot of it with Brian Ortega. So she took it very seriously. And that's all you can ask for out of people outside of our little bubble.
Yep. All right. Just to wrap up, our Thanksgiving was great. Had a lot of great food and great company. And you know, we skipped last year's Thanksgiving with our family because of COVID. So it was nice for all of us to get together and experience it and see each other. And I'm sure a lot of you all went through the same. And if not, then I just hope you had a nice set of days. And again, I want to give a shout out to my godson, Logan Gonzalez. I bring him up from time to time. Finals. They were losing 27-19 with about 7 minutes in the fourth, and then they scored three TDs. They wound up winning the game 38-35, and it was amazing because myself and my buddies, we went up to early Mexican restaurant around the corner from the stadium, and we ordered a lot of margaritas. And we were so hammered that walking into the stadium, nothing was stopping us. You know, the ushers were going, go that way, you know, but we just walked straight onto the field, and we walked across the back end zone like we owned the place, and basically just stood right at the end of the end zone, guys. And it's funny because the last two touchdowns actually occurred in that area. So we have, like, I'll probably share a lot of stuff online this week. Great footage of touchdowns and the celebrations and, we were so ghetto, Goes. Let me tell you something. There was one time when they scored and we were all jumping, almost like, you know, when the soccer teams, when they drop the confetti and they all just start jumping on the stage. It was kind of like that. You know, those teams are still lining up to get their extra point teams on or whatever. They're doing that. And everyone's running around high-fiving, almost kind of like in the end zone. We shouldn't have been there, dude. The scary thing is, I wonder if we would have cost them like 15 yards. But we were just It just looked like a bunch of Daffy Ducks.
That's all I could think of. I saw the video. I thought you guys were screaming, "We're Richmond till we die," the way you guys were jumping up and down. But I thought the scariest thing was sending Boyd in for a high five, man. That could have ended his career with a finger or something.
He was crushing hands because there was just a lot of people to high five, and he was high fiving people, smacking people around. He's the hardest high fiver on earth, by the way. And he's just got them big blue collar hands. And so he was high fiving people, everything. And I don't know. It's just been such a fun ride since watching him play like the little mighty mites where they don't even pass. They just run it mostly all the way to him walking up to the line saying 1, 2, 3, hut, you know, trying to draw somebody offside. That don't work. Taking a step back, looking at the coach. The coach calls in some sort of an audible. He relays it to everybody, sends someone in motion, just seeing him kind of command everything. But the kid has got a rifle for an arm. That's why I call him the sniper. And he spreads it to all of his receivers and running backs. He's got a favorite or two, but nobody feels left out because he spreads it nicely, man. But he has these routes, these throws that not too many athletes can do. You just have to have a powerful arm to get it across the field, you know, and not get picked off. But it was so cool to watch up close like that. So I want to give him a special shout out. That was incredible. Now all these teams advance. Like if this wasn't enough, this really should be the keeper because it's a CIF title. Good enough, the season could end. But, you know, everything expands now. And so now there's the regionals. And then after that, there's the state. So it's like, fuck. I'm done, man. I love the kid. And the games are fun. Once I'm there, they're fun. But it's long drives to California up and back and screaming and losing my voice and all this during the pandemic and all that. But
you might have to do your taxes in California this year.
This one was pretty special. It really was. And that's why we had a blast. I was just talking to the guys. Let's do it again this weekend. I'm ready to act a fool again. Anyway. All right. Folks, we'll see you all on Thursday. Thank you, as always, for your support of the show. Oh, I want to give a shout-out to Christian Padham. I don't know if he still listens, but he's listened in the past. And he's a fan of the show. So if he happens to catch this episode, Christian Padham, your name got dropped by our cousin Charlie. And I want to thank you for tuning into our show and being an MMA fan and checking out our website. All right, with that, we're out of here. Have a nice day. Go out there and be a champion. See you on Thursday.